We're back on board HMS Belfast, yeah. Which was your home for several years during the Korean War. And every time I speak to you, you've reflected on the fact that the Korean War seems to be the forgotten war. But in the last year, you've told me about two events that seem to perhaps have changed that perception, that it's no longer the forgotten war.
Yes, very much so. I think, first of all, the major change in the interpretation of the Korean War came as a result of a very big event that the Royal British Legion put on at the Royal Horse Guards Parade in July last year, where the content of that show completely changed in a lot of people's minds the concept of the Korean War. And no longer was it being called a forgotten war. But it was a war that people shouldn't forget because of the immense loss of life and the desolation of South Korea. So when we came away from that, I think all the veterans who were there, as well as others, had a different opinion of what the war was really all about. And some of our members got up on the podium, who had been earlier invited to do so, and gave a short summary of what their job, what their life, and the after effects of serving in the Korean War were all about. And some were very dramatic, which a lot of people, I don't think, could stomach, particularly one colleague of mine who mentioned the amount of dead bodies piled up where he was stationed and so forth, and various other things. There was one speaker, well, two or three on his behalf, of Bill Speakman, who was the only person who was awarded the Victoria Cross. And members of his family got up and spoke about him and what sort of man he was, and he would never have fussed about the Victoria Cross. And so that went down very well.
And this was the event in Horse Guards Parade?
In Horse Guards Parade,
yes. What was your role on the day?
I was invited to read the exhortation by the producer of the whole event. And I was quite shocked. And she said, "No, we want you to read it." Something about my voice or something. And the fact that I'm one, if not the only, Royal Navy man there. But I couldn't get to the podium on my own without being accompanied by a junior officer who walked me right round the buildings and onto the podium. And he gave me a little nudge when I was to start, and in between one part of the exhortation, there was a brief playing of music, and then I had to read the final part. And that went out pretty well all over the world, because the whole event was being covered by worldwide television, America especially, Korea itself, and various other countries who had been involved. So once again in my life, I felt really, really honoured and, I don't know, wonderfully how I've been picked out to do this honour. And it's another memory of for me to put away in my mind that we now have a situation where the Korean War is no longer a forgotten war. And that, if you ask of any of the veterans who were there, they will say, it's long overdue, but we got what we wanted in the end.
And a few weeks ago, you told me that there was yet again another acknowledgement of the service in the Korean War, and that was a sort of royal approval. Can you tell me about that day?
Well, yes, way back in January, we received a letter from the Royal British Legion who had organised all the July event at the Horse Guards Parade, and I must say, very, very efficiently too. I received a letter from the British Legion stating, would I be prepared to attend a audience in central London in the way of a reception starting at 2:30 sometime in March. And I wrote back yes, not knowing what it was. And it took a little while for us to get told that it was going to be an audience with the King at Buckingham Palace. And although the King wouldn't be there, other members of the royal family would, and they would be representing him. So at the end of the day, I think there was 100, 250 veterans. And we kept on getting letters about security, and I wasn't allowed to let my taxi driver drive up there. Anyway, I got that all sorted out, and the taxi driver drove me right up to the entrance to the Royal Palace. But in the official invitation, there was a little slip of paper asking me to get there 1 hour before the rest of the event was going to take place. And not knowing what that was, I automatically thought it was something to do with having all the veterans in a room with somebody talking to us, maybe a member of the royal family or whatever. But when I got to the palace and I got up to the main entrance, which was absolutely awe-inspiring to look in there and see all the aides all lined up to help us, all immaculately dressed. And this great big tall chap, about 6'6", he came up and he took my wheelchair from my daughter. He said, oh, you're coming with me. And with that, we turned around and then we walked all the way down this long corridor and then turned right into, to go through several rooms, huge rooms all decorated beyond compare. And it got quieter and quieter, and quite frankly, I wondered where on earth we were going. So I called out to him. I said, well, where are we going? Where are the other veterans? He said, oh, you're not going with them. I said, well, where? He said, you're going to meet the King. And with that, I think I almost fell out of the wheelchair. So shocked was I. But within 2 minutes, we arrived in this room with just five armchairs in. One of them, two were together, and one of them was moved away, and my wheelchair was put next to that, to the other one. And I hadn't got settled when a wonderful lady came up and said, "Well, I like coffee." So she brought me a wonderful cup of coffee in a really exotic china cup. And I must say, I was the only one who was offered it. So whether that meant something, I don't know. And we'd only been sitting there, and the other three were all members who had got up and given a talk at the Royal British Legion event in July. So we all knew each other. And I found it very strange, really, that that should happen. And then the King came in, and I couldn't get up. So he shook my hand and he said, "Oh, welcome, Mr. Navy Man," he said. So, because 2 weeks before, I'd had to write a short biography of what we'd done in Korea and so on. So he had read that. And he said, "Oh, you carried out heavy bombardment." And I said, "Yes, and I'm absolutely stupefied. And here's the King telling me what we'd done." So, and he went round the other three, and then eventually came and sat down to me, and we just talked in general. But the thing really that was the highlight for me, I had changed my normal shoes to a very highly polished pair. And he was just gazing down at the floor nonchalantly, and he looked at his shoes, which were very highly polished. And then he looked at mine, he says, "Do you know, your shoes are polished better than mine." I said, "Good heavens, sir." I said, "Well, thank you very much for saying so." I said, "That's very kind." He said, "No." He said, "They do look much brighter than mine." So with that, I sat back and got my breath, and we carried on talking. But he was only there half an hour before his aide got up, who was sitting across the room, and sort of said, "All right, come on, sir, it's time, you've got to go. He's only done half an hour." But what he said first of all when he came into the room is, "Would you please apologise to your wife and anyone else in the family for me not being there?" He said, "But I'm under strict orders." And he said, "I've got to carry out what I'm told, whether I like it or not." And he said, "I don't like it. I'm very frustrated." He said, "But I've just got to do what is best for everyone." And with that, you know, it was very down to earth, and there was no upper class status about him, although he spoke a lot better than us. And he looked very well. And when he went, he came round and shook our hands, and away he went. And then we were taken into the next room where all the other veterans were and their wives. So I got to sit near my wife Sheila, not next to her. And during that time, Princess Anne came up and had several words with me. And later on, we had to go into the next room for a speech by Princess Anne on behalf of the King. And shortly after that, Princess Sophie came up and singled me out for a few minutes talk. So at the end of the day, when I got back in the taxi to go home, I was just trying to gather all what had happened. And did it really happen? Yes, it did. Well, at 92, you're a very honoured and privileged man.
So, in view of these two events, the Horse Guards Parade event and meeting the King, do you feel your job is done now, that you have at last shown that the Korean War is no longer the forgotten war. Do you feel that now?
I think I do. When I come away from the Royal Horse Guards parade event, I really did think that the nature of the war had finally been established by the public, and that people in public office were now saying, right, it's not the forgotten war anymore, right? Because all us veterans have ever wanted was for a peace treaty to be signed, which is still yet to come. And when that comes, we can finally say our job has been completed. But that, I'm afraid, is some way off yet.
But your work continues, and you're here today on board the ship,
yes,
to engage with the public as part of the We Were There programme.
Yes.
What will you say to them today?
Well, I will answer any questions that they want to fire at me. I will, when whoever's with me says, do you want to have a word with Ron? He served on the ship. So that is the opening for me to say, right, I was on the ship in 1950, and 2 years in this mess deck. I used to sleep in those hammocks and this. And I used to say, I was in the Korean War, and let them know that there are still a few of us left who fought in that war and hopefully have left some form of message in their mind to say, you know, there's, we've still got to respect these people. And I know that they do. They do.